from the Carter Subaru Studios. This is the G and Ursula Show with G Scott and Ursula Voitin.
It's Fresh Fridays on the G and Ursula Show. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning, G. Happy Friday to you. I have to say,
let me keep it a buck.
Come fast enough.
Can I keep it a buck with you already?
Yes, of course. Yes.
I need the text line 888-973-CHIRO to send me something good. Send me some good news because I'm telling you, your boy is dragging this morning. There's something about it. It feels like a Monday. I couldn't shake it. I told Chef right in. I said, look, Chef, I don't know what it is, man, but your boy is dragging.
Send me something good.
I just told him that. Tell me that.
I'll be on deck.
Hey, Ursa, what's going on the show today, my friend?
Okay, if you're tuning in and you're saying, if they talk about this thing in Texas again, this horrible situation in Texas again, I'm tuning you out. I understand, but we have to talk about it. So we will be looking into some different angles, including mental health. In the wake of this week's massacre, we are hearing a lot about mental health. And after Heather's newscast at 9:30, you're going to hear why some mental health experts say it's not a mental health issue. It's an anger problem. And then we also will find ways to lighten up. And I understand that Tyler Lockett, one of my favorite Seahawks, he won an Emmy. Is that right? So we're going to hear about that coming up at 9:47.
Can I ask you a question?
Yes.
I was hearing the show sheet, wasn't really, I don't want to say feeling it because I'm tired. Is there some good levity in the show today? Is there some good smiles? We get some laughs on Fresh Friday? Because I had a lot of serious stuff.
Yes.
We're going to talk about your midlife crisis at some point. That's for sure.
Yes.
That'll be fun for us.
Nobody wants to hear about my midlife crisis.
Okay, here's a question. Okay, we are going to bring it up at 10:30. And actually, it's our friend and former colleague, Don O'Neill, who sent it to me.
Uh-huh.
And he said, I think you're going to really like this. And he was correct. So question for all of you. What do you consider midlife? And then, is there a way to avoid a midlife crisis?
Have you heard what I've been endorsing lately? All right. I'll do absolute ED later.
It's going to be one of the most awkward transitions, but yes, I have heard it.
Let's give the people what they want. Ursula's top news stories of the day brought to you by Economy Fence Center.
Questions are being raised now about what happened during the 90 minutes from when that teenage gunman slammed his truck into a ditch near Robb Elementary School in Uvalde, Texas, and when he was finally killed by a Border Patrol agent.
After initially saying he confronted a security officer, police now say that was inaccurate. No officer was present. The gunman then walked down a hallway and into the two connected classrooms. We would shoot and kill 19 children. And two teachers.
CBS's Janet Shamlian spoke with one of the young survivors who described the horror that day.
He came in and he crouched a little bit and he said, it's time to die.
This 9-year-old boy hid as the shooter entered the classroom. He was one of the fourth graders who survived. Many of his classmates did not.
The cop said, help if you need help. And then they got one of the persons in my class said, help. The guy overheard and he came in and shot her. And then the cops barged in into that classroom.
And initially, police said the school's armed officer encountered the gunman. Now, investigators say that never happened.
Sources tell CBS News Border Patrol tactical teams arrived at the school just before noon. And by the time agents breached the room with a shield to take the shooter out, he'd been there for an hour or more.
There were a lot of frustrated parents outside the school building. A mother of two students was handcuffed to keep her from going inside. And as soon as she was released, she did sprint into the school to rescue her two children.
There's so much about this story that outside of the 19 kids and two teachers that were tragically killed. But there's so much more to this story that just adds more grief to it, if you will. And I just want to just keep it simple. I'll just keep it simple by saying that the cops, in this situation would happen down there. You start hearing what's being reported right now. The cops engaged with a man outside of the school unsuccessfully. And then he was able to get inside of the school. And then that whole ordeal lasted for 90 minutes. And then you have parents coming to the outside to kind of ask for their kids and what's going on. And then it's been reported also that you had some cops that actually kind of went in and took their child out of the class. That's been reported. And I just wonder if not for the eyewitness accounts, I wonder if not for the cell phone videos, if this information would have been put into the police report to admit those things that have happened. There's just a lot of grief as you continue to talk about this.
There is, and as we speak right now, it looks like the director of the Texas Department of Public Safety is now giving another minute-by-minute timeline of what happened because it was so confusing and different people had different stories as to what happened. Now, I'm going to hold back on any criticism of police response primarily because I understand when you have a massive situation like this, there is a lot of conflicting information. But I understand also that parents were very, very frustrated that it felt like seemingly nothing was happening. And even law enforcement experts and law enforcement, and I did reach out to someone that I often contact within the Seattle Police Department to get his take on it. And he said that, yes, you are trained. You are trained to go in there. You don't wait. I mean, you can ideally you'll have four people to go in with you. Sometimes you can go in with as few as two. But there are some situations where even if you are the one, you're going to be going because you see it is an active shooter situation and time is of the essence. So you have to do threat assessment, et cetera, et cetera. And it sounds like a lot of that did not happen, even though they were trained to do this. So I think this, for me, shows that even when you have good guys armed with guns, That is not necessarily going to be the answer if their training doesn't go into effect and you have a bad guy like this 18-year-old who is very, very much into wanting to do as much destruction as possible and doesn't really care.
Well, let me go off what I saw on cell phone video, watching the parents screaming at the cops, asking them, aren't you going to go in?
Yes.
Like, I saw that. That wasn't a report. Yes. I saw that. I also saw some cops handcuffing some parents. Saw that as well. So all of this happening during the time in which the person is inside of there. I also heard and saw with my own eyes the, I don't know if he was a chief or a captain, actually get on there and said, hey, we had to wait for the proper armor because we don't have that armor. So,
And I asked my police friend, I said, are you in favor of teenagers being allowed to buy body armor? Do you feel like you have any chance against them?
And what did
he
say?
He said, no.
How come cops don't come on? How come they
don't
go?
Well, I mean, I think they would if they, and this is something that we need to ask the police chief. I know that my friend would happily go on. And I think that, and he also told me that he says there are going to be many in law enforcement who say, you know, Second Amendment, and I'm an absolutist on this, but he believes the vast majority would say there are some sensible gun responsibility kind of things that would make sense, even though they may not solve everything. But, you know, I kind of came up with a scenario. You know, you're always the one about analogies.
What do you got?
And I shared one this morning that I just want you to, and again, this is an analogy, and I just want you to imagine that you're a parent of one of these Uvalde victims.
Okay.
You go to your doctor, and I'm going to call him Ted Cruz, Dr. Ted Cruz. And you go to him and you ask for help with this gun violence pandemic. You tell him you're really worried about your other son who goes to the same school because he is at high risk. Dr. Ted Cruz gives you a list of options. He can offer mental health counseling. He says he can prescribe guns for your kid's teacher, metal detectors, more officers at schools. But then you say, well, Dr. Cruz, I heard other states and other countries have tried some sensible gun responsibility measures like universal background checks or red flag laws and banning assault style rifles. Dr. Cruz then tells you, none of those would have worked here. I can tell you that. You are being brainwashed by the Democrats and their liberal media cohorts who want to take away all our guns. So then you tell them, wait, I also own a gun. You know that you still will be able to own guns. And so you tell him that. And you want him to at least consider options that have had some effect in other places. And Ted Cruz says, no, that's never going to be on the table. And if you like what those other countries or states are doing, you don't have to live here. Go there. Then he excuses himself so he can go attend the NRA convention and see his colleague, Greg Abbott, get praise for making it easy for 18-year-olds, like the one who killed your son, get assault-style weapons. And then you later find out that Dr. Cruz has received more than $400,000 from gun rights groups, more than any other U.S. politician.
Whoa.
How do you feel?
When you put it that way, and when you explain it that way, by saying that the doctor is basically telling you there's nothing we can do, we're not going to try anything else, and oh, by the way, I did get money, and it's on record, and it's exactly $400,000+. I don't know what to say. I don't know what to say to that other than it's
That's
awful.
Not okay. It's not okay. Okay. No. And it's not okay for you to continue to say that. Here's one glimpse of hope. And we'll talk about this with our colleague Michael Medved at 10 o'clock. But I saw that Mitch McConnell said, yes, we need to put together. He gave the green light for, was it Senator Cornyn?
Yeah, John Cornyn.
John Cornyn and Chris Murphy from Connecticut, and some others to work together and see if there's any kind of lane where they can find some middle ground.
Mm.
I know we've heard it before, but maybe they're hearing not again. This cannot happen again. And we, without doing it, and it's not a panacea. And any of these things that I just mentioned, universal background checks, red flag laws, banning assault-style rifles, it's not going to magically make things go away. But are you not going to throw every possibility at a problem that has not changed?
On Wednesday, I told you guys, and I'll say it again, I do believe there's going to be change. And we have to think that way. You cannot say something happens and you can't say, no, nothing's going to happen. There's not going to be change. Because I say that from a place of people that come before me never had that attitude of things aren't going to change. They don't change in the amount of time that we want them to. I can't believe that still you and I and all of us are still talking about racism. But then you start to wake up and you say things I do. And this is how I address racism. I say it like this. Is it where we want to be? No. Is it better than yesterday? Yes. Progress is there. Time takes time, but you can't stop change. And I do believe there's going to be something that will come from this. And we have to believe that way.
Mortgage payments are increasing now, and homeowners in Washington are seeing some of the biggest jumps in the country. There's new data from the Mortgage Bankers Association says the median monthly payment hit nearly $2,800 last month. Imagine $2,800 a month. The Seattle Times reports that is $811 higher than a year ago and more than $1,000 higher than in April of 2019 before the pandemic. Nationwide, the median payment is just under $1,900 a month, and don't expect any relief soon because according to Freddie Mac, the average interest rate on a 30-year loan is just over 5%, which is relatively low, but up more than 2 points from a year ago. And there's every indication, as we know, that it's going to continue to go up.
How many of these stories are we going to talk about on a daily basis, right? This story right here. Some of you, you already know Ursula's top five. You know it before Ursula even tells it to you.
I hope not.
Right?
Maybe you know some themes.
But you know what it's going to be. It's going to be, oh, by the way, we're needing more money for the homelessness crisis. Oh, the next story. Oh, by the way, there's been an increase in the homelessness population. Oh, by the way, mortgage rates are kind of climbing. Cost of living is going up. Rents up. Mortgage prices are up. Housing, overpaying for houses. The reason why I had to do that is I had to say this. I was getting ready to write notes on this topic, and I told Chef, I ain't writing notes. I'm just going to tell you like this. People are struggling. And the more, and one last thing. You guys want to talk about, oh my goodness, I can't believe crime's going up? Let me just say this real quick. crime is going to continue to go up because desperation starts to set in. And when desperation starts to set in, you find yourself people find themselves doing things that are not legal. It might not be a serious crime, but real quick, small crimes can turn into big crimes.
The crazy thing is people are still paying it. And people are still buying the homes. I told you about a house across the street. I was like, it's a tiny house. I cannot believe it. It would go for that price tag. It did. The biggest concern that I have is that people are going to be paying too much. And they're going to get themselves in so much debt that if there is any kind of bubble, or if we do go into a true recession or depression or whatever it is, that once again, there are going to be a lot of people who are underwater. And that is a big concern.
And it is not a fun feeling to be underwater. It is not a fun feeling to wake up. And somebody's listening right now. And whoever you, if you are that person and you're somebody that's waking up and you feel like there's no matter what you can do, no matter how hard you work, it's going to be the same result. I just want to tell you, I feel you. I 100% understand exactly what you're going through. And I want to just tell you this. Keep going. Don't stop. Because the truth is, the sun will rise tomorrow and you'll get another chance to take a shot at it. And it's rough. And people are struggling. And people are only a paycheck away or a medical emergency away from life being completely different. One minute you're living in a nice house, the next minute you're not. It happens that fast. Coming up next, Rachel Bell joins us. And she basically comes in and says, yes, mental health is an issue. But is it the reason for gun violence? We discuss that next. This is Gene Ursula.
Welcome back to the G and Ursula Show. While we were in that newscast, there actually has been some breaking news out of Uvalde, Texas, and it is... someone with the Department of Public Safety, they're trying to explain what happened. And I wanted to dip in, but Heather, you were monitoring this as well. And I think this official who is speaking right now, Chef, what is his name?
Steve McCraw. He's the director of Texas Public Safety.
Okay, so he has already said that it was a wrong decision not to breach
right.
the classroom door. They're talking about the timeline because there are a whole bunch of questions.
And as G was saying, all you had to do is watch the video to see parents trying to get to their kids, and they were stopped. So it looks now like officials in Texas are admitting that they waited too long to get in there, which is counter to what most... police response is to this
right.
kind of situation.
Okay, I'm going to dip in real quick and see it because this has been going on for about 10 or 15
minutes.
Was the incident commander receiving the information coming via the 911 call? And if so, why not? And if so,
Yeah, well, that question will be answered.
So asking
but,
why
I don't have the,
it took so long.
Sure, the information we have right now. Because I don't have the detailed interview right now.
Go ahead, sir. Right there.
Yeah. So, in this American situation, did any police officers go in and get their own kids while the parents were outside?
Not that I'm aware of, no.
Okay, so there were reports that some of the police officers went in to get their own kids, so that was a question, and this gentleman is saying no, he's not aware of that.
I know for two, for certain did, and those two did not die.
Sir,
why was that cop
open
door still
cropped
open? Why was that cop open door still cropped open even after the incident was occurring with shots being fired at the funeral home?
Bottom line is, like we reported what happened, is that back door was propped open. It wasn't supposed to be propped open. It was supposed to be locked. And certainly the teacher that went back for her cell phone, it propped it open again. So that was an access point that the subject used.
You believe that the teacher is
okay, okay. Go ahead. Go ahead. Blue. Go ahead.
Hold on. You have said in hindsight mistakes were made, and
you
just tried to Congressman is now calling for the FBI to investigate in response here.
Yeah.
Is going to be held accountable.
Well, first of all, hey, we welcome the FBI. There's a reason why there's the FBI special agent in charge behind me right now. They play a vital role. And again, this is about finding facts and reporting facts as quick as we can. It's not about trying to defend, or it's not about trying to assess or even be hypercritical. It's about the facts and sharing whatever we learn on the facts as quick as we can to be as transparent as we can. You know, okay, the media, but more importantly, the parents and the public, the citizens of Uvalde and Texas.
It's very hard to hear the questions being asked, but again, the question what was just raised was that the FBI is now investigating the response to this.
And the whole thread of this was, why did you not go in immediately in this kind of situation? If it happens anywhere else in the country, generally what you do is you go in immediately. And they waited. They got a 911 call from a student in the class asking them to send the cops in.
With everything going on, all of the screaming with the questions, you can tell the energy. We were during the break. We could see the energy. You can feel the energy before we even heard what was being said. You can tell there's a lot of commotion that is going on. I think the best thing for us to do is to kind of give you everyone. We'll have Heather and those out there at the news desk
monitoring
everything.
Because it's hard to put it into context, and I don't want to again jump into any conclusions, but obviously there's a lot of anger. What we've learned now is that they're admitting some mistakes.
Yes.
And they're saying that the investigation is continuing. The FBI is involved in the investigation of the response.
And in hindsight, they should have immediately gone in, and they didn't. So they are going through the facts, as you say.
Yes, thank you, Heather. We'll continue to monitor that. We'll have another update from CBS News. And I want – gee, you look
– Just everything that's going on. Just the whole thing of the whole energy of it all, the admitting of the wrong decision is right there in black and white. It says it was a wrong decision not to breach the classroom door. And so we're going to be finding those things out. And it kind of goes with what we started off the show with. We started off the show with that this story continues to get more frustrating, because when you start thinking about the innocent lives that were lost and you start thinking about what should happen, or if you will, in our minds, right? In our minds, we think that if something were to happen and we've been told that, hey, if you just had security here, or if the good guy with a gun would have been here, then this would have happened, or this wouldn't have happened. And what we are seeing now is there was a lot of people standing around with guns waiting. So we'll find out what's going on the rest of the way.
If we could, I think we should reset because we only have a minute. And I would like to do Rachel's feature, because she did look into this. Could we do that this next segment?
Yeah.
So we'll do that. Stay with us. We're also going to try to get more information, what we missed while we were doing the show and while this news conference was happening. So you are listening to the G and Ursula Show. We'll be back.
You can ring my bell, Rachel Bell.
It is 9:47, and we're doing things a little bit differently this show. Yes, it is a fresh Friday, and we will find some moments of levity, but there is a lot of breaking news. As you know, that there is a press conference that just wrapped up in Uvalde, Texas, and there are new details being revealed about the shooting timeline, and police officials are admitting that they made mistakes, including deciding not to breach the classroom door. So we will get more on that new timeline. But in the wake of the Texas elementary school massacre, there's been a lot of talk of investing in mental health. But how much does mental health actually play when it comes to mass shootings? Rachel Bell looked into this.
Since Tuesday's school shooting in Uvalde, Texas, a lot of people, including Governor Greg Abbott, have blamed the tragedy on mental illness. But Lauren Simmons, CEO of NAMI Washington, the National Alliance of Mental Illness, says that simply isn't true.
Violence is not a product of mental illness. Violence is a product of untreated anger. And the contribution of mental illness to overall gun violence in the United States is smaller than 2%. When we do see mental illness involved in gun violence, it's really gun violence against oneself, because more than 60% of gun deaths in the United States are suicides. And mental illness is a significant underlying cause of suicide. But mental illness is not an underlying cause of community violence.
She says there are many other warning signs we should look for.
The risks of violence increase slightly if one has co-occurring substance use or dependency, or if one grew up in a setting where there was violence, childhood abuse, or if they were bullied. Or quite honestly, another contributing factor is just being young and male. Are they isolated and young and male? Do they have impulsivity and anger issues? People have a really hard time understanding how could somebody walk in somewhere and shoot people and kill them? They must be mentally ill. What else could it possibly be? It's untreated anger, and anger is not a mental illness.
Lauren says this contributes hugely to the stigma around mental illness.
There can be the assumption that give us a gun. If we have a mental illness, we're likely to go out and kill somebody, and that is not true. So it definitely contributes to the stigma of having a mental illness and people's willingness to share that they have mental illness. And I think it's also important to note, you know, other countries experience the same amount of mental illness in their populations, and we don't see mass gun violence or even significant gun violence in other countries. And these are countries who, when they have had a mass gun violence incident, their leaders have created common sense gun laws, which is something that our leaders are unwilling to do. They have clearly accepted that guns are more important than the lives of the citizens of our country.
But she wants to be clear. NAMI does not advocate for gun rights. Lauren finds it interesting that gun advocates are using mental illness as a scapegoat, since it's a topic this country mostly ignored until the pandemic, when worldwide isolation affected nearly everyone's mental health. But before that, depression and anxiety was seen as a weakness by many.
Every time there is community gun violence in our country, we have been sending out press releases. So just a few weeks ago, we sent out a press release about the shooting in Buffalo, which was incredibly racially motivated. I didn't get one press call. Since I sent out our press release this morning, all I've done this morning is respond to press calls. So, you know, it just really depends upon what catches the media's eye at what time.
Lauren would like to see the media cover mental health more often, but not through stories related to gun violence.
A lot of great information there. I am even guilty. I think mental health has become that umbrella term that is so often used, like also homeless. It's just easier to just put it all under one big umbrella term. And I have heard even this morning, it's, well, you know, you have to be crazy to shoot and kill 19 innocent children and two teachers. But we're learning now that, and they said it again this morning, that there was no evidence of any mental illness. He had never been treated. He'd never been, his mom, who has been speaking now, and is, I saw her crying and talking about how sorry she is. And there was no talk of mental health. But we do know now that he bought these two assault style rifles shortly after he turned 18. And this morning we're finding out that he shot more than 100 rounds.
Yeah. They blame shootings in black communities on the lack of fatherhood and the lack of traditional family values. Those are the discussions. As a matter of fact, we were talking to somebody last week, and somebody said to me, I mean, this is 2022. This was just last week. Somebody said to me that black-on-black crime is one of the worst things that's happening in America right now. And I had to give the stats on that. See, what ends up happening is a lot of people go through life going off of what other people have said. And the reason why we have no or hardly no progress in this country is because there's always a boogeyman that somebody is pointing to. And like you heard her say, they care more about gun rights or guns than you care about people. More the saying of more good guys with guns, we just saw that, has failed. The militarized police with bigger budgets in this situation failed. school resource officers in this situation failed routine active shooter drills, which they've had in the past. Failed. At what point are you going to ban the AR-15? All of these talking points, all of these reasons and mental health and lack of fathers in the home, and all these talking points point to one thing. Get rid of the AR-15. These politicians line their pockets. There's an NRA convention that's happening right now. You think they care about these kids? They don't. These politicians get their pockets lined, and it's a very few of them. The majority of the country wants better, but there's a very few in this country that does not. And why? Why don't they? Because they make money off this. I don't get upset about people's opinions. Opinions don't change this country. Policy does. And until you get rid of the AR-15, until you start listening to law enforcement, because you think law enforcement wants to leave their family and go out and about and know that there's a possibility of going against an AR-15. I know I talked to my dad's best friend last night, and he told me, get rid of these AR-15s. I would love for our cop friends to text in right now. I know you can't get on the air. I know you can't say anything publicly, but text in right now and tell me if you want AR-15s out there on the street.
Well, the officer who I spoke with this morning said no, and certainly not a 18-year-old with body armor and an assault-style rifle. I also want to mention, though, that this is from a principal of an elementary school, and this is just something for all of us parents, too. And she says, your elementary age children are not emotionally, socially, and intellectually able to navigate cell phones, unsupervised technology, chat rooms, TikTok. It doesn't mean they aren't good kids. They are just too young. Who is monitoring our kids? The answer cannot be schools. And I think my message throughout this is ask ourselves, what is it that we can do right now? Yes, it has to be policy. And yes, and what we can do is make sure that the politicians who are blocking change are no longer there.
Well, I've seen a lot in this country, and I've seen a lot of families and parents and folks try to do the right thing. In this case, Ursula, these elementary school kids 2 days away from the summertime, you know what they did? They went to school. That's what they did. They went to school in a state where it is legal to go and buy AR-15s. Gene Ursula.